Chapter 8. From this day forward they would call me nothing but Sagnier Capitano, but I told them I would not be called Sagnier. Well then, said the gunner, who spoke good English, you shall be called Captain Bob, and so they gave me my title ever after. Nothing is more certain of the Portuguese than this, take them nationally or personally, if they are animated and heartened up by anybody to go before, and encourage them by example, they will behave well enough, but if they have nothing but their own measures to follow, they sink immediately. These men had certainly fled from a parcel of naked savages, though even by flying they could not have saved their lives, if I had not shouted and hallooed, and rather made sport with the thing than a fight, to keep up their courage. Nor was there less need of it upon several occasions hereafter, and I do confess I have often wondered how a number of men, who, when they came to the extremity, were so ill supported by their own spirits, had at first courage to propose, and to undertake the most desperate and impracticable attempt that ever men went about in the world. There were indeed two or three indefatigable men among them, by whose courage and industry all the rest were upheld, and indeed those two or three were the managers of them from the beginning. That was the gunner, and that cutler whom I call the artist, and the third, who was pretty well, though not like either of them, was one of the carpenters. These indeed were the life and soul of all the rest, and it was to their courage that all the rest owed the resolution they showed upon any occasion. But when those saw me take a little upon me, as above, they embraced me, and treated me with particular affection ever after. This gunner was an excellent mathematician, a good scholar, and a complete sailor, and it was in conversing intimately with him that I learned afterwards the grounds of what knowledge I have since had in all the sciences useful for navigation, and particularly in the geographical part of knowledge. Even in our conversation, finding me eager to understand and learn, he laid the foundation of a general knowledge of things in my mind, gave me just ideas of the form of the earth, and of the sea, the situation of countries, the course of rivers, the doctrine of the spheres, the motion of the stars, and, in a word, taught me a kind of system of astronomy, which I afterwards improved. In an especial manner, he filled my head with aspiring thoughts, and with an earnest desire, after learning everything that could be taught me, convincing me that nothing could qualify me for great undertakings, but a degree of learning superior to what was usual in the race of seamen. He told me that to be ignorant was to be certain of a mean station in the world, but that knowledge was the first step to preferment. He was always flattering me with my capacity to learn, and though that fed my pride, yet, on the other hand, as I had a secret ambition, which just at that time fed itself in my mind, it prompted in me an insatiable thirst after learning in general, and I resolved, if ever I came back to Europe, and had anything left to purchase it, I would make myself master of all the parts of learning needful to the making of me a complete sailor. But I was not so just to myself afterwards, as to do it when I had an opportunity. But to return to our business, the gunner, when he saw the service I had done in the fight, and heard my proposal for keeping a number of prisoners for our march, and for carrying our baggage, turns to me before them all. Captain Bob, says he, I think you must be our leader, for all the success of this enterprise is owing to you. No, no, said I, do not compliment me. You shall be our Sagnier Capitano, you shall be general, I am too young for it. So, in short, we all agreed he should be our leader, but he would not accept of it alone, but would of me joined with him, and all the rest agreeing, I was obliged to comply. The first piece of service they put me upon in this new command was as difficult as any they could think of, and that was to manage the prisoners, which, however, I cheerfully undertook, as you shall hear presently. But the immediate consultation was yet of more consequence, and that was, first, which way we should go, and secondly, how to furnish ourselves for the voyage with provisions. There was among the prisoners one tall, well-shaped, handsome fellow, to whom the rest seemed to pay great respect, and who, as we understood afterwards, was the son of one of their kings. His father was, it seems, killed at our first volley, and he wounded with a shot in his arm, and with another just on one of his hips or haunches. The shot in his haunch being in a fleshy part, bled much, and he was half dead with the loss of blood. As to the shot in his arm, it had broke his wrist, and he was by both these wounds quite disabled, so that we were once going to turn him away, and let him die, and, if we had, he would have died indeed in a few days more. But, as I found the man had some respect showed him, it presently occurred to my thoughts, that we might bring him to be useful to us, and perhaps make him a kind of commander over them. So I caused our surgeon, to take him in hand, and gave the poor wretch good words, that is to say, I spoke to him as well as I could by signs, to make him understand, that we would make him well again. This created a new awe in their minds of us, believing that, as we could kill at a distance by something invisible to them, for, so our shot was, to be sure, so we could make them well again too. Upon this the young prince, for, so we called him afterwards, called 6 or 7 of the savages to him, and said something to them, what it was we know not, but immediately all the 7 came to me, and kneeled down to me, holding up their hands, and making signs of entreaty, pointing to the place, where one of those lay whom we had killed. It was a long time, before I or any of us could understand them, but one of them ran and lifted up a dead man, pointing to his wound, which was in his eyes, for he was shot into the head at one of his eyes. Then another pointed to the surgeon, and at last we found it out, that the meaning was, that he should heal the prince's father too, who was dead, being shot through the head, as above. We presently took the hint, and would not say we could not do it, but let them know, the men that were killed were those that had first fallen upon us, and provoked us, and we would by no means make them alive again, and that, if any others did so, we would kill them too, and never let them live any more. But that, if he, the prince, would be willing to go with us, and do as we should direct him, we would not let him die, and would make his arm well. Upon this he bid his men go, and fetch a long stick or staff, and lay on the ground. When they brought it, we saw it was an arrow. He took it with his left hand, for his other was lame with the wound, and, pointing up at the sun, broke the arrow in two, and set the point against his breast, and then gave it to me. This was, as I understood afterwards, wishing the sun, whom they worship, might shoot him into the breast with an arrow, if ever he failed to be my friend, and giving the point of the arrow to me was to be a testimony, that I was the man he had sworn to. And never was Christian more punctual to an oath than he was to this, for he was a sworn servant to us for many a weary month after that. When I brought him to the surgeon, he immediately dressed the wound in his haunch or buttock, and found the bullet had only grazed upon the flesh, and passed, as it were, by it, but it was not lodged in the part, so that it was soon healed and well again. But, as to his arm, he found one of the bones broken, which are in the fore part from the wrist to the elbow, and this he set, and splintered it up, and bound his arm in a sling, hanging it about his neck, and making signs to him, that he should not stir it, which he was so strict an observer of, that he set him down, and never moved one way or other, but as the surgeon gave him leave. I took a great deal of pains, to acquaint this negro, what we intended to do, and what use we intended to make of his men, and particularly to teach him the meaning of what we said, especially to teach him some words, such as yes and no, and what they meant, and to inure him to our way of talking, and he was very willing, and apt to learn anything I taught him. It was easy to let him see, that we intended to carry our provision with us from the first day, but he made signs to us to tell us we need not, for we should find provision enough everywhere for 40 days. It was very difficult for us to understand how he expressed 40, for he knew no figures, but some words, that they used to one another, that they understood it by. At last one of the Negroes, by his order, laid 40 little stones one by another, to show us how many days we should travel, and find provisions sufficient. Then I showed him our baggage, which was very heavy, particularly our powder, shot, lead, iron, carpenter's tools, seamen's instruments, cases of bottles, and other lumber. He took some of the things up in his hand to feel the weight, and shook his head at them. So I told our people they must resolve to divide their things into small parcels, and make them portable. And accordingly they did so, by which means we were fain to leave all our chests behind us, which were 11 in number. Then he made signs to us, that he would procure some buffaloes, or young bulls, as I called them, to carry things for us, and made signs to, that if we were weary, we might be carried to, but that we slighted, only were willing to have the creatures, because, at last, when they could serve us no farther for carriage, we might eat them all up, if we had any occasion for them. I then carried him to our bark, and showed him what things we had here. He seemed amazed at the sight of our bark, having never seen anything of that kind before, for their boats are most wretched things, such as I never saw before, having no head or stern, and being made only of the skins of goats, sewed together with dried guts of goats and sheep, and done over with a kind of slimy stuff like rosin and oil, but of a most nauseous, odious smell. And they are poor miserable things for boats, the worst that any part of the world ever saw. A canoe is an excellent contrivance compared to them. But to return to our boat. We carried our new prince into it, and helped him over the side, because of his lameness. We made signs to him, that his men must carry our goods for us, and showed him what we had. He answered, "Sai, Sagnir," or, "Yes, sir," for we had taught him that word and the meaning of it, and taking up a bundle, he made signs to us, that when his arm was well he would carry some for us. I made signs again to tell him, that if he would make his men carry them, we would not let him carry anything. We had secured all the prisoners in a narrow place, where we had bound them with mat cords, and set up stakes like a palisade around them. So, when we carried the prince on shore, we went with him to them, and made signs to him to ask them, if they were willing to go with us to the country of lions. Accordingly he made a long speech to them, and we could understand by it, that he told them, if they were willing, they must say, "Sai, Sagnir," telling them what it signified. They immediately answered, "Sai, Sagnir," and clapped their hands, looking up to the sun, which, the prince signified to us, was swearing to be faithful. But as soon as they had said so, one of them made a long speech to the prince, and in it we perceived, by his gestures, which were very antic, that they desired something from us, and that they were in great concern about it. So I asked him, as well as I could, what it was they desired of us. He told us by signs, that they desired we should clap our hands to the sun, that was, to swear, that we would not kill them, that we would give them chairik, that is to say, bread, would not starve them, and would not let the lions eat them. I told him we would promise all that. Then he pointed to the sun, and clapped his hands, signing to me, that I should do so too, which I did. At which all the prisoners fell flat on the ground, and rising up again, made the oddest wildest cries, that ever I heard. I think it was the first time in my life, that ever any religious thought affected me, but I could not refrain some reflections, and almost tears, in considering how happy it was that I was not born among such creatures as these, and was not so stupidly ignorant and barbarous. But this soon went off again, and I was not troubled again with any qualms of that sort for a long time after. When this ceremony was over, our concern was to get some provisions, as well for the present subsistence of our prisoners as ourselves, and making signs to our prince, that we were thinking upon that subject, he made signs to me that, if I would let one of the prisoners go to his town, he should bring provisions, and should bring some beasts to carry our baggage. I seemed loth to trust him, and supposing that he would run away, he made great signs of fidelity, and with his own hands tied a rope about his neck, offering me one end of it, intimating that I should hang him if the man did not come again. So I consented, and he gave him abundance of instructions, and sent him away, pointing to the light of the sun, which it seems, was to tell him at what time he must be back. The fellow ran, as if he was mad, and held it till he was quite out of sight, by which I supposed he had a great way to go. The next morning, about 2 hours before the time appointed, the Black Prince, for so I always called him, beckoning with his hand to me, and hallooing after his manner, desired me to come to him, which I did, when, pointing to a little hill about 2 miles off, I saw plainly a little drove of cattle, and several people with them. Those, he told me by signs, were the man he had sent, and several more with him, and cattle for us. Accordingly, by the time appointed, he came quite to our huts, and brought with him a great many cows, young runts, about 16 goats, and 4 young bulls, taught to carry burthens. This was a supply of provisions sufficient. As for bread, we were obliged to shift with some roots which we had made use of before. We then began to consider of making some large bags like the soldiers' knapsacks, for their men to carry our baggage in, and to make it easy to them. And the goats being killed, I ordered the skins to be spread in the sun, and they were as dry in 2 days as could be desired. So we found means to make such little bags as we wanted, and began to divide our baggage into them. When the Black Prince found what they were for, and how easy they were of carriage, when we put them on, he smiled a little, and sent away the man again to fetch skins, and he brought 2 natives more with him, all loaded with skins better cured than ours, and of other kinds, such as we could not tell what names to give them. These 2 men brought the Black Prince 2 lances, of the sort they use in their fights, but finer than ordinary, being made of black smooth wood, as fine as ebony, and headed at the point with the end of a long tooth of some creature we could not tell of what creature. The head was so firm put on, and the tooth so strong, though no bigger than my thumb, and sharp at the end, that I never saw anything like it in any place in the world. The prince would not take them till I gave him leave, but made signs that they should give them to me. However, I gave him leave to take them himself, for I saw evident signs of an honorable just principle in him. We now prepared for our march, when the prince coming to me, and pointing towards the several quarters of the world, made signs to know which way we intended to go, and when I showed him, pointing to the west, he presently let me know there was a great river a little further to the north, which was able to carry our bark many leagues into the country due west. I presently took the hint, and inquired for the mouth of the river, which I understood by him was above a day's march, and, by our estimation, we found it about 7 leagues further. I take this to be the great river marked by our chart makers at the northmost part of the coast of Mozambique, and called there Quiloa. Consulting thus with ourselves, we resolved to take the prince, and as many of the prisoners as we could stow in our frigate, and go about by the bay into the river, and that 8 of us, with our arms, should march by land, to meet them on the river side. For the prince, carrying us to a rising ground, had showed us the river very plain, a great way up the country, and in one place it was not above 6 miles to it. It was my lot to march by land, and be captain of the whole caravan. I had 8 of our men with me, and 37 of our prisoners, without any baggage, for all our luggage was yet on board. We drove the young bulls with us. Nothing was ever so tame, so willing to work, or carry anything. The negroes would ride upon them 4 at a time, and they would go very willingly. They would eat out of our hand, lick our feet, and were as tractable as a dog. We drove with us 6 or 7 cows for food, but our negroes knew nothing of curing the flesh by salting, and drying it till we showed them the way, and then they were mighty willing to do so, as long as we had any salt to do it with, and to carry salt a great way too, after we found we should have no more. It was an easy march to the riverside for us that went by land, and we came thither in a piece of a day, being, as above, no more than 6 English miles, whereas it was no less than 5 days, before they came to us by water, the wind in the bay having failed them, and the way, by reason of a great turn or reach in the river, being about 50 miles about. We spent this time in a thing which the two strangers, which brought the prince the two lances, put into the head of the prisoners, viz. To make bottles of the goat's skins, to carry fresh water in, which it seems they knew we should come to want, and the men did it so dexterously, having Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.